Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cellular Healing TV. This is episode number 114, and I'm your host, Meredith Dykstra, and we have Dr. Pompa on the line, of course. And today we have special guest, Dr. Jack Wolfson, who is known as the paleocardiologist. So before I introduce Dr. Wolfson, I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. Here's his bio. So Jack Wolfson, D-O-F-A-C-C, is a board-certified cardiologist who uses nutrition and supplements to prevent and treat disease. After 10 years performing angiograms, pacemakers, and other cardiac procedures, Dr. Wolfson started Wolfson Integrative Cardiology in 2012 to offer patients the ultimate in holistic heart care. Raised in Chicago, he attended Midwestern University for his DO degree and completed a three-year internal medicine residency and three-year cardiology fellowship. He was selected as the chief fellow of his class. Together with his wife, Dr. Heather Wolfson, DC, they are the Doctors Wolfson. Their website, thedoctorswolfson.com, is an excellent resource for holistic health and lifestyle information. The Doctors Wolfson have two beautiful boys who were born at home, nursed for over 3 years, and they're still co-sleeping. Amazon bestseller, The Paleo Cardiologist, is the first book by Dr. Wolfson. So welcome to Cellular Healing TV, Dr. Wolfson. So glad to have you on the show.
Thanks so much, Meredith. It's a pleasure to talk to you and Dr. Pompa, of course, and very excited to share this information with the rest of the world.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, thank you. And I said, go run and get that book, hold that book up that you just, that's the paleo cardiologist, mm-hmm. It says audiologist there because your finger on the C, but it sure says cardiologist. There you go. We're going to try what an audiologist is.
Yeah, I'm such a bad promoter, there you go. Beautiful looking buffalo on the cover. And it's been fantastic. Chapter 14 of the book is called The Wonders of Chiropractic. And the book is not all about paleo. A couple chapters are on paleo, but chapter 14, The Wonders of Chiropractic. And there I share evidence-based medicine about chiropractic, how I refer all my patients out for chiropractic, the story, a couple different stories about my wife in there. And my wife kind of gets on me a little bit and she said, the chapter on chiropractic, it's only 8 pages long and you got to include this and you got to include that. And I said, no, that's what the professionals, the chiros are for. Yeah. Let them really explain their message well. My point of saying it is that everybody in my practice has to see a chiropractor and it's part of heart health. But I'm not going to, dive deeply into the science, although I do have a nice depiction on there, of course, with the brain and the spinal cord and the whole autonomic nervous system, which supplies every organ in the body, including the heart and the blood vessels, what's near and dear to me. So I really illustrate that to patients, and it's been fantastic.
Well, it brings me to the first question I have for you, right? It's I was at a conference with you, and you told a story, because I love when I get these, MDs like yourself, and I just interviewed one of the leading stem cell biologists, Dr. Bruce Lipton, right before this interview. And I asked him the same question, man, how did you get here from there, right? Cardiologist to this guy that writes a book like that with a chapter about chiropractic and the benefits. God, how did you get there from here? Tell that story.
Well, I was in practice for 2.5 years out here in Arizona, and I'm doing angiograms and pacemakers, like Meredith was saying, and staying up all night on call and all that fun stuff. And I was definitely getting frustrated with what was going on in medicine, because you'd see people that are on 3, 4, 5 blood pressure drugs, and yet their blood pressure is still sky high, and you're like, why are we not fixing this person? Why are they not normal? Or you'd be working in the hospital and somebody would come in with congestive heart failure and you'd tune them up with pharmaceuticals and you'd send them out. And 3 weeks later, they would come back in with the exact same thing. It's a revolving door. And around that time also, I tell the story in the book extensively about my father. My father was a cardiologist. He was a DO like myself. He was a brilliant, brilliant man. All of his friends were DOs. I went to osteopathic school because he was the head of cardiology at the school. And at the age of, mid-50s, he starts getting sick with a Parkinson's-like diagnosis. And then he dies from it at the age of 63. So I'm frustrated with the patients. I see what happens to my father, and the medical doctors at Mayo Clinic just say, nothing we can do. At that time, I meet the woman who would become my wife. And she starts whispering all these different things in my ear, like, you're not going after the cause of people's problems, and your father got sick because of poor nutrition and environmental pollutants, and he never did get chiropractic care, and he was around radiation as a cardiologist. And the hospital is the sickest, most toxic place in the entire world, and that's where this man lived, you know, for 40 years of his life. So after meeting Heather, I opened up my eyes very quickly. As you know, so many medical doctors will shut out on that. They won't even listen to another opinion besides what they've been brainwashed to believe.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's where it started. Then you told another story. Something happened at the wedding.
So, you know, as far as chiropractic is concerned, I used to run marathons and triathlons, and I had my share of back pain. And I've seen DOs before when I was in medical school. I was having, you know, some headaches, nothing real serious. And one of the quality osteopathic manipulators grabbed a hold of my cervical spine and adjusted me. And I did fantastic after that. And then with the back pain, I went and saw a chiropractor, this old timer in the suburbs of Chicago. Robert Bonahome was his name in the late 90s. And I got better very quickly. My back was great. And then in meeting Heather and seeing her adjust children with ear infections that are on their way to ear tube surgery or strep throat or whatever the complaint was, my wife's answer was always chiropractic. And it made such a huge difference in the children that would come into our house or in her office, and they're almost listless. And she adjusts them, and now the kids are running around the office or our house with our children, and it was just this miraculous recovery. And then we're at our wedding, and the ceremony happens, and now it's the cocktail hour, and we're enjoying ourselves, talking to friends, and someone comes running up and says, Grandpa David passed out. So we run over to Heather's grandfather. He's 86 years old. He's laying on the ground. I get down on you know my knees, and I check his pulse, and he's got a pulse, but it's thready, it's slow, but he's breathing. And it looks like he had a common faint, of which I had seen hundreds in my career. Well, while I'm checking his pulse and making sure he's breathing, I'm not actually doing anything, right? There is my wife, Dr. Heather, in her wedding gown. In her wedding gown that cost me an arm and a leg, right? She's on the grass in her wedding gown, and she's at his head holding his cervical spine, and then just goes bang and just adjusts him the first time he's ever been adjusted in 86 years.
Wow.
And he quickly opens up his eyes, and then he's sitting up, and then he's standing within a couple minutes, and he's back at the wedding. I've seen, like I said, hundreds of people pass out, and here's a guy who, you know, recovers so quickly. Most people, sometimes they feel lousy for hours, days, even up to a week, where they are not fully recovered. This is an 86-year-old guy who's back at the wedding, and that is the power of chiropractic.
That is a game changer, you know, in anyone's life seeing that, right? It's like, you know, what are you doing? You know, so what's your practice look like now? I mean, you know, so the average person comes in with heart conditions, and, you know, now, you know, your approach is obviously a lot different. You know, there's a time and a place for medications, but what are you doing day in and day out?
Well, you know, obviously there is a time and a place for pharmaceuticals and for emergency procedures, and that's just that. It's for emergency situations. But for prevention, the medical doctors offer nothing. Yeah. They have nothing when it comes to prevention. They've got some drugs, statin drugs and blood pressure drugs, that barely have efficacy according to their data. And what my practice is all about is not about how do we reduce someone's risk of a heart attack, stroke, or dying in the next 5 years from 7% down to 6%. We're talking about how do we get them down to 0%. That's what I want to offer my patients. So I do a long intake with people, an hour and 15 minutes, getting their history, their examination, finding out about their sleep and about their diet and about their physical activity, talking honestly about, you know, I hate to, you know, push the point here, but, you know, talking about chiropractic care, why it works, why every one of my patients has to be under chiropractic care. But
they must look at you.
The information.
They must look at you like, really? I mean, you know, you must get some odd looks from the patients when you talk about that.
Well, in the old practice I was in, for 10 years I was in a practice. I was a senior partner at that practice up until 2012. And there I certainly got a lot of looks. I got a lot of complaints from patients directly to to the practice, from other referring doctors who would say, why is Wolfson referring my patients out to chiropractors? Why is Wolfson referring my patients out to naturopaths? Why is he taking my patient off drugs? Why is he talking about this crazy paleo diet? So in 2012, I left that practice to open up my own practice, Wolfson Integrative Cardiology. And here, the patients kind of know what they're in for. They know when they come to me what they're going to be getting. Some of them are extremely well educated. They've been into the natural world, Dan, since before you and I were born, in some cases. And they are, like I said, very knowledgeable. So they know what they're getting. They have their expectations. And like I said, I do the most in-depth cardiovascular testing. I can't use my hands. I'm a DO, but I wanted to be a cardiologist like my father right from the beginning. I do adjust now friends and family. I'm pretty good with cervical stuff, but I leave the patients for the professionals. Once again, I have to use the blood test. I have to use some ancillary things, and I do very in-depth stuff to give people the answers. You're taking these supplements. Are they working? That's what we look for.
Yeah, you know, I mean, let's talk about some of the testing, and then we'll talk about some of the things that you do. Obviously, you know, the diet, right? I mean, I love the picture on your book of the buffalo, because my last seminar, I was just talking about the American Indians, right? Now they have all the diabetes and heart disease. Well, the buffalo is the mainstay of their diet. The most fatty portions of that buffalo were cherished. They ate the whole buffalo, organs included. And, you know, it's just like, we look at that, you know, and we look at how these people ate, and then we look at a modern diet and we wonder why there's so much diabetes and heart disease. Well, we're seeing that throughout every culture. So we'll get there. But, you know, the testing, you know, we look at, I think that if we asked our audience, maybe not just this audience, cholesterol, they all have great fear with cholesterol, right? And I always say, hey, look, I'm looking at the evidence, and I go, really, total cholesterol doesn't really matter. It shows that more people have heart attacks with low cholesterol or normal cholesterol. So what type of cholesterol test do you like, you know, and what other tests do you like?
Well, I think you bring up a, you know, very good point when it comes to cholesterol. We do know there's plenty of data that says the higher your serum cholesterol is, the lower your risk of dementia.
That's right.
And the higher the risk of, the higher the cholesterol is, the lower the risk of cancer. Those people that have very low cholesterol levels, that's a sign that cancer is lurking somewhere. And when it comes to, you know, so when I say that, you know, total cholesterol, you're right. The correlation is trivial at best.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought I lost you there for a sec. Trivial at best. And what really matters is, you know, is taking a deep dive. So looking at the lipid particles, sizes, ApoB, ApoA, LP little a, all these different markers of inflammation that tell us so much. And then, of course, we can look at genetics. We can look at serum levels of omega-3 and intracellular nutrients and heavy metals. And yet the medical doctors are typically just doing the 1970s blood test, the total cholesterol, total LDL, total HDL, and those are very poorly correlated with outcomes.
Well, look, you took my favorite test right out there. You know, we look at CRPs. I want to know HGBA1Cs. I want to know glucose values, which and insulin values, which cause oxidation of the particles of cholesterol. That's the test that we do. The NMR test, if you're looking at a lab like LabCorp, but it looks at the particle number and the size of the particles, and that's what oxidizes. And so we are on the same page, Doc. It's amazing that modern medicine hasn't caught up with that yet. My clients and the people watching this will go to their doctors and they will say, well, I want this test. And they have no idea of that test. They're still running good old cholesterol levels, which I agree with you. I believe the higher the values actually show a healthier person, you know, so and the lower values scare me to death. So, you know, it's opposite. So what about the statins? I mean, I can't even leave that conversation with statins. I mean, you know, people are afraid to death to come off statins because their doctor said that they can't. You know, and I'm looking at research going statins causes dementia. Statins cause liver failure, joint problems, type 2 diabetes. You know, I mean, why aren't they looking at these studies, Doc?
Right. Well, you know, I think, you know, first off, you know, when it comes to, you know, what's happening with the typical medical doctors, they don't have time. They don't have time because they see patients every 10 minutes. And I know that because I used to do the same thing.
Right.
So, hey, Mr. Smith, you know, great to see you. Here's your statin drug. Here's your blood pressure drug. Get a stress test on the way out. Bye. And then when they check the blood test, they a lot of doctors don't even check the blood test anymore. They feel that everybody should be on statin drugs. And there's a faction within cardiology that says, don't even check the lipid numbers. Don't even waste your breath. You're going to put them on a maximum dose of statins anyways. So why even bother? And I think that that's why, you know, patients are frustrated. We offer people so much more. And there was a recent study that came out from the Cleveland Clinic and was quoted on by Steve Nissen, who's one of the most famous cardiologists in the world, where he said that, you know, there is a true rate of myalgias, muscle aches and pains, that is triple what we thought it was from the original studies. And these patients are clearly suffering and they get bypassed by the doctors that say, oh, well, that's fibromyalgia. It's got nothing to do with statins, or just tough it out and stay on it. Who wants to live like that, especially when we're talking about trivial benefit on the statin drugs? And once again, what my book is all about, my book is not about don't take statin drugs,
right?
Although that is how I feel. I don't say that in the book. In the book, I say, here are some studies. And here's what the studies say. The studies show statins work in certain populations by a little bit.
That's right.
But when you go to, when the person goes to their medical doctor, the conversation goes like this. Here's your prescription for Lipitor. I don't want to take Lipitor. Doctor says, do you want to have a heart attack? Do you want to have a stroke? Do you want to die? Patient says, no, I don't want to have a heart attack, stroke, or die. Well, then take your Lipitor.
Yep.
Those are the scare tactics. That's not information. That's not informed consent. That's not informing the patient. That's just scaring the patient. That's to use a common phrase to among what's going on in the, you know, schools today, bullying. That's bullying the patient.
Yeah.
And tell the patient the truth. And when doctors like you and I show the data to the population, they walk out of there and say, wow, I don't want to take this drug. I want an alternative. Now, there may be some fool, if I may be so bold and brash as to say fool, or ignorant person who says, 7% down to 6%, that's 1%. But I may be that one person who takes drugs every single day for 5 years to get that benefit. And that's true. You know, Mr. Jones, you may be that one person. And if you want to take the drug, go take it. You're not right for my practice. You can go see the cardiologist down the street. But the majority of people, when they're truly informed, refuse not only drugs, but most cardiology procedures. When you fully inform the patient, you know, the risks and the benefits and the alternatives to angiograms, bypass surgeries, pacemakers and defibrillators, a lot of times people, rightfully so, opt for an alternative.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Jack, it's amazing because I've given people like you, right? I can only give the information. Here it is. You have to make your own decision. And, you know, gladly, please make that decision with your doctor. Let's educate them here. You know, take these studies, you know, to your doctor. And, you know, the doctors don't even take the studies. They won't take them out of their hands. They'll say, well, doc, look at this. This is what I found. And they say, there's a lot of studies out there. Meanwhile, these are medical journals, you know, published in medical journals. You know, it's not like you just found it on the internet, but that's what they attack. Oh, there's all kinds of crap on the internet. No. These are published studies from New England Journal of Medicine, JAMA, you name it, and they won't even look at it. How is it possible, Dr. Jack? How could they not? If someone brings me something, I look at it. If I'm wrong, show me I'm wrong. I want to be right.
Right. Right. Well, you know, here's the purpose of my book was twofold, and it's to educate patients, number one, and number two, it's to stick in the face of their cardiologist. Yeah. And what I tell them is that if the cardiologist says, "Oh, Wolfson, I've heard about him. He's a crazy cardiologist. Oh, he married this girl, and he got brainwashed into her line of thinking, and he's just in love, and he'll say anything that his wife says." Here's the references at the end of my book, and these are references from mainstream journals, over 300 of them, that tell us why we do things. So if the doctor is insulting me, he's also insulting the 300 MDs and PhDs and other holistic providers at the end of this book who did their research. That's who they're insulting. The research is out there, but just like you said, the doctors don't want to read it. They've got no time to read it. The doctors learn from the drug reps who come in to bring them lunch, take them out for dinner, give them their freebies, take them on trips. I know it because I lived it. And the studies are there that say that doctors are influenced to prescribe drugs by a pen. A free pen influences a doctor to write a prescription.
Crazy. Here's the other thing. Okay, let's say we get beyond the meds and we have a more educated person comes in and says, "Okay, doc, but what else can I do besides the stats? I want to change my diet." Of course, most of them will just laugh and say, "Oh, diet has nothing to do with it." People tell me that's sad. I'm like, "What? Really? They actually said that?" Okay, so, but let's say that one says, "Oh, okay, here's what you can do." The advice is going to go like this: low fat, low calorie, exercise more. That's all the advice. What do you think about that advice?
And you know what's even more sad about that, Dan, is that the doctor giving the advice doesn't follow that diet, doesn't live that lifestyle. The practice I left, two-thirds of the doctors, at least, will be classified as overweight or obese. So who's going to listen to that person? You know, Dan, you are someone who talks the talk and walks the walk. That's who patients want to listen to. And I, of course, live the same way. And when it comes to nutrition, we tell people, obviously, that it's nutrition and environmental pollutants that are the cause of all disease. Can you imagine, Dan, for a doctor like me, on the first day of medical school, I get there and I'm sitting in the big auditorium with 250 other wannabe doctors. And some professor, some PhD gets up there and says, "Okay, we're going to start medical school, but I want to just tell you this. The cause of all disease is poor nutrition and environmental pollutants." That would have just summed up everything. Instead, I got to learn about 30 different skin lesions and 25 different causes of pancreatitis. And I got to learn, and it would have been so simple and put it all in perspective. But of course, the doctors aren't doing that. And we're not talking about nutrition. The nutrition guidelines are a joke. The low-fat diet is a joke. It was based on faulty study from the 1960s by Ansel Keys and others. There were plenty of other people that were shouting differently. But the difference was people like Ansel Keys were all funded by the cereal makers, the bread makers, the Kellogg's, the Nabisco, the Quaker Oats. And those of us in the grass-fed animal, camp and eating our organic vegetables and nuts and seeds and eggs and avocados and coconuts, were left behind, and the world suffered for it. Diabetes exploded, heart disease exploded, dementia exploded, cancer exploded, you name it.
Yeah, it's exactly right. I mean, Ansel Keys, those watching, that don't know who he is, he really did. I mean, he was pictured on Time Magazine, News, all the big magazines that this guy had the answer. And he handpicked, really certain countries that looked like a trend in the lower fat, the longer they live, the less heart disease, the exact opposite. When you put in all the numbers and all the data, it showed the opposite. That's what people don't understand. Countries eating, more of, a diet that was higher in fat, the exact opposite, lower in carbohydrates, actually had the lowest heart disease rates. And people don't understand that. And yet, here's the thing. You can't flip the television on in the day and hear about a low-fat, low-calorie recipe that doesn't cause heart disease, and it's low in cholesterol, and it will lower your cholesterol. I mean, it is the market. We buy Cheerios off of other brands because it said the lower cholesterol 3 or 4 points. You know, I mean, this is what people are exposed to, Doc. I mean, you know, where's the sense in it? I mean, how many books can we write? How many years of studies can we say this is wrong? And yet still the American Heart Association still backs a low-fat diet. Where do we go from here?
Well, I think obviously they've got, you know, they've got mud in their eye or whatever you want to call it, you know, cake on their face, whatever the metaphor is. You know, so they're going to be very slow to reverse what their recommendations are for the American Heart Association, the American College of Cardiology, although they're starting to come around. But I think, you know, the word of you and I and other doctors is getting out there. I'm speaking at an event called Paleo Effects at the end of May. There's going to be 4,000 paleo people there in Austin, Texas. And so I think people are really gravitating towards that. I know you're a big ketogenic guy, and the evidence-based medicine that ketogenic involves. I think things are definitely moving in that direction. But the powers on the other side are obviously tremendous. They're not going to give up easy from Quaker Oats, Kellogg's, Nabisco. I just read a study yesterday. You're going to flip when you hear this, and if you didn't see it, that they compared lipid numbers in a group of people that got corn oil versus olive oil. And wouldn't you know it, the corn oil group did better. And if you look at the bottom of the paper, the sponsor of the study is the company that makes Mazola corn oil.
Oh.
Can you imagine that?
No.
Now, personally, I think when it comes to oils, I think there's a lot of different disparity. There's a lot of different factors that go into it. I think genetically, some people with the ApoE 3-4 and 4-4 genes, they really have to watch their added oil intake. But shoot, if you look at the Mediterranean diet, where they're given liters of olive oil to use on a weekly basis, they have incredible outcomes. And I try and tell patients, eat olives, eat tons of olives, because the nutrients and the phytonutrients and the phenolic compounds and the healthy fats that are inside the actual olive, wow, it is just tremendous.
Hey, Doc, you know, I believe in, you know, I'm for keto diets. I'm for paleo diets. I wrote an article called Diet Variation, and I teach it. You know, when we look at our ancient ancestors in these cultures, the Hunza people, the Tibetans, the American Indians, I mean, you name it, you can go down the list of these very, very healthy people. You know, they had diet variation. All low in carb. I mean, you know, but however, when you look at, say, the Hunzu people or the American Indians, in the winter, they would go into a very high fat, you know, very, you know, higher protein diet. And then in the spring, they all fasted because they didn't have access to the foods and the harvest yet and the growing. And then in the summer, they went more of a vegetarian type of diet. Still low carb, by the way, still low carb. But it was definitely a higher carb for, you know, what they would normally eat. The diet would shift. We were forced to do dietary changes in the past. Today, we're not. So everyone eats the same eight foods. I'm a believer in diet variation. But I think in common, we understand that today, carbohydrates, even in studies, they consider a low-carb diet. To me, it's still a high-carb diet. They call 180 carbs a day, low carb diets. In some of the studies, I chuckle. I have trouble getting in 180 grams of carbs a day. They're calling that a low carb diet, for goodness sakes. Yeah. So, you know, I think we resonate on, you know, the fact that today, no matter what, people are eating too high of carbohydrates. It's driving inflammation. It's driving glucose that drives oxidation of, you know, fats and cell membranes and those things. But yeah, I mean, we're on the same page. You know, it has to be changed the way people from the up down are looking at diet.
Well, I think even also, you know, true when you're talking about that seasonal variation, because everybody these days, when it comes to fruit, they're having fruit for breakfast and they're having, you know, fruit after lunch and fruit after dinner and the fruit smoothies. When our Paleolithic ancestors ate fruit seasonally, right? So in the Northern Hemisphere, it would be when things ripen in August, September, October. The fruit back then, of course, was wild berries and crab apples, as opposed to today. It's a, you know, super sweet, super, you know, modified, you know, hybridized fruit. But even back then, when they did ramp up on that carb intake, It was in preparation for the winter time when they would be storing, they needed to store all that fuel in their body as fat, just like you said. So I totally agree with you there.
Yeah. Yeah. You, when you look at a banana, you know, here's the thing. We go to healthy conferences, you and I, right? We get invited to lecture at healthy conferences. And, you know, most of the people are eating these fruits, the apples, the bananas. You see them gravitate to it, right? You know, it's like, so they're healthy, but yet they're still gravitating to the sugar foods that are considered healthy. You know, is a banana even really a banana today? I mean, this is a glucose rising. Eat a banana and watch what happens to your blood glucose. It soars. I mean, and they're doing it day in, day out. Healthy people eat bananas almost every day.
Right. And, you know, I tell people, you know, a piece of fruit a day, max. But if you're trying to lose weight, if you're trying to control blood sugar, get rid of it. It's definitely not necessary. All the antioxidants we need, you can find in the vegetables. You can find it in the nuts and seeds. You can find it in the avocados and the coconuts and the aforementioned olives.
Well, I like to limit them even to the berry family when they have challenges with blood glucose, inflammation, which, again, a more primitive fruit, less altered, less glucose rising. And, you know, again, arguably really the fruit that our ancestors really gravitated to. I didn't see them grabbing bananas of the way bananas are today. That's for sure.
No, most certainly. I think, you know, another issue with fruit too, is that it does continue to stoke that sugar craving. So they may start off the day with berries or with another piece of fruit, and then invariably they want more sugar later on and they want a bigger high from it, because it's so addictive, and that's when they're going to be reaching for, you know, cookies, cupcakes, and ice cream.
Well, let's have the grain conversation a little bit, because, you know, obviously grains are not the grains of our ancestors, but, you know, I mean, what's the thought? I mean, humans and grains anyway. I mean, well, you know, did, you know, humans really ever were meant to eat grains? What's your feeling?
Well, one of the first books I read when going natural and holistic was Weston A. Price. And I know you've read Weston A. Price and his book. You know, he's a dentist, travels around the world in the 1920s by boat with his wife. It is a phenomenal read. And the people of the modern day Weston A. Price Society, they're all about eating grains, but they're soaked grains. They're soaked and they're sprouted, so they're specially prepared. And they try and go for the ancient grains and the whole grains. But I don't see where that's necessary in the modern diet. I'm not saying I'm perfect paleo. What I am is always organic, always gluten-free, and always soy-free. So you may catch me having dark chocolate-covered almonds sometime. You may catch us at a birthday party and we're eating Strauss's free-range grass-fed ice cream. But for the majority of the time, I am perfect paleo, and that does not include grains. Grains just went up, you know, they have to be prepared. And 10,000 years ago, 25,000 years ago, 500,000 years ago, we had no ability to prepare them. We were hunter-gatherers. We were hunter-gatherers. And what did we hunt? You know, one thing I will say is a knock on paleo is when people say that the foundation of the paleo pyramid they come up with online, that it's meat. And our pyramid is not meat. The foundation is vegetables. So vegetables in the morning, vegetables with your lunch, vegetables with your dinner. That's the foundation. But I try and get across the point that everybody has to eat some meat and or seafood, because that's what every ancestor did. But, you know, you get in these arguments with people that are vegan and the vegan lifestyle. And it's just not natural. It's just not what our ancestors did for millions of years.
Yeah, and I think even our genetics do play a role in how much protein, how much carbs, how much fat, you know, who succeeds a little bit, you know, who succeeds more on one diet versus another, as far as some people do better, higher fat, some people do better, a little higher protein, some people do better. But one thing we, you know, can see is for sure is too many people are eating too many carbohydrates. There is no doubt about it. You know, and then, you know, the grain argument. I went zero grain when I was sick, doc, getting my life back. And 4 or 5 years, not a one. You know, and today, you know, I'll eat a little bit of the ancient grains, you know, and typically I do that maybe once a week. But that's it, because I agree. I don't think that we need grains. I could live my whole life without one bite of grain. To me, it's a pleasure food. I could live without it. I don't need it. But you have to understand, most people don't believe that. They believe that we need it, right? You could live life without a carbohydrate, by the way. Truth be told, I mean, you would live. You couldn't live without protein. You couldn't live without fat. So to show you where the hierarchy of macronutrients goes, I would argue, you know, somewhere in that order. So.
Well, I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, obviously, gorillas don't eat grains, and monkeys don't eat grains, and baboons don't eat grains. So why would we as human mammals, why would we need to eat grain? We don't.
Right. And so people think that you need it. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's a good argument. You know, and then again, we can, you know, look at the toxic side of heart disease. Right. You'd mentioned that, you know, and I think that's the hidden thing. I think now we're even getting down the road even more narrow. Look, I see clients all over the world with bizarre and unexplainable symptoms and, you know, different conditions. And I can say that none of them would ever get their lives back if they didn't go upstream and remove the cause. And in these types of cases, autoimmune, all the bizarre, there is a toxic source driving inflammation and therefore your illness. So I'm pleased this, you know, to hear you talk about toxins as being a driver for heart disease. Because if inflammation is the major cause of heart disease, then how are we not dealing with toxins? You know, that's the big driver.
Well, the way that the doctors are dealing with inflammation is to put people on statin drugs. That's what they're trying to do. Which probably, if there's any benefit to the benefit of statin drugs, is probably in the fact that it does have those pleiotropic effects. It does do a lot of different things. So yes, it lowers lipids down, but that may not be where it's effective. But it may be in the fact that it lowers oxidative stress and lowers down inflammation. Air pollution is linked to increased cardiovascular risk. We know it's linked to lung issues, but certainly cardiovascular risk. Air pollution is linked to higher levels of inflammation. It's kind of interesting that, and I suggest any doctors that are on this call, sell air purifiers out of your practice, because air purification systems lower inflammation, they normalize blood pressure in these patients that are living in polluted cities. The data is there. Of course, indoor pollutants from the new paint, the new flooring, the new furniture, the new mattress, the television they brought in, everything is off-gassing. All these chemicals are in your patient's environment. Tell them they need an air purifier and then sell it to them, because you're their doctor. You're their healthcare provider. Don't let them run out to some random store and get some piece of garbage. Sell them a quality product. You're going to make money. The patients are healthy. The patients are happy. And it's good for everybody. But air pollution, BPA from plastic, is associated. It's all over the literature. Heavy metals, lead, arsenic, cadmium, aluminum. I just did a post on aluminum to Natural News. These are all in the literature. But the problem is the cardiologist is taking a look at his medical journal and saying, interesting. We got a new drug. We got a new procedure. This is kind of cool. Here's an article about lead and heart disease. Who cares? They're not interested in lead and heart disease. They're interested in pills and procedures. But that's why people rush to see doctors like you and I and our friends, because they want the answers. So we measure those things in the blood work. We measure those metals and we show them their metal burden. We tell them that their metal amalgams and root canal teeth have been a known source of cardiovascular disease for 75, 80, 90 years. We've known it.
Yeah, Dr. Levy, he wrote a book called The Roots of Disease some years ago and talk about how root canals are causing heart conditions. I'm so proud to hear you say that, you know, that amalgams and these things are driving conditions like heart disease and other inflammatory conditions. Because if you don't remove the cause, there's never, ever healing that's going to truly occur that lasts in the body. You know, and people were ignoring these things. Look, indoor air quality is 7 times. You know, worse than what's outside in the worst cities. So, you know, I'm so glad to hear you say that. And we talk about that. We have an article, Meredith, that we share, and Meredith, you can tell them where it is, but it's called The Toxic Top 10. And, you know, so many of them are indoors. There's five right under your nose, things that we're doing in our bodies, over vaccinations and all the, you know, things like that, all the fillings, root canals, and then five right under your roof. That, you know, it's things that are right in our homes that are poisoning us daily, driving cellular inflammation in the diseases, and nobody is dealing with it. Listen, even the alternative doctors aren't telling people to get rid of this stuff, you know, in their lives. And it's the stuff that's driving cellular inflammation. And then my cellular detox doc, the thing there is you got to get upstream to the cellular level and get the cells doing what it is meant to do. And that's get rid of this stuff. You know, so you're on, we're on the same page. Meredith, where do they get that article? And you probably have some questions for Dr. Jack as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've been having some technical issues throughout the broadcast, and I haven't been able to see you guys, and I missed some of the audio. So I'm not sure if maybe you've covered some of my questions, but as far as the article, head over to drpompa.com, and under the article archive, that article is called Detox Your Life, The Toxic Top 10, and you can check that out. And Dr. Pompa and I also did a Cellular Healing TV episode on those toxic 10 items as well. And that was a little early 100s, so you can find that easily on YouTube. But well, anyway, I guess one of my questions too, Dr. Wolfson, when you had mentioned three meals a day with eating lots of vegetables as the foundation of your diet, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on fasting. That's a topic that we cover a lot here.
I don't have a lot of strong opinions on fasting. I do obviously get the, you know, some of the science when it comes to maybe skipping breakfast or skipping dinner and just eating two meals a day, and therefore you get kind of like an 18-hour fast. I understand, obviously, you know, how our ancestors did that. I really haven't worked that too much into my lifestyle or into what I advocate to patients. I think that's probably kind of like at a really higher end, you know, level where people have really taken all these different steps and now kind of want to go a little bit further. I'm definitely not, you know, I've had people approach me and talk about water fasts. I'm definitely not into that. I think that you need the nutrients to detoxify. So I think a juice fast is appropriate. I mean, I tell patients that are overweight, just watch the movie Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead and watch this guy who loses 150 pounds over 3 months by going on a fast, on a juice fast, you know, fast slash cleanse. So I think that's good. I think a couple times a year to do a juice fast with a shot of olive oil at nighttime, continue with your supplements, your detox products. I definitely advocate that.
Let me challenge you to go watch the, I interviewed Thomas Seyfried. He talks about water fasting. And I interviewed a couple episodes ago Dr. Jason Fung. He's a medical doctor, kidney specialist out of Toronto, right? Yeah, Toronto. Anyways, watch those episodes. You'd be shocked. I just gave a conference for doctors, and the amount of literature that I really went over was out, you know, just voluminous on fasting and the different things. You know, it was something our ancestors were forced to do. And, you know, I think, you know, I learned about fasting some years ago, but I think the science is really caught up, you mm-hmm. know, to what happens during a fast. And, you know, we do need certain nutrients, you know, to detox, right? But, you know, something magical happens to the mitochondria during fasting times. I intermittent fast daily myself, you know, which has been probably the number one thing I've ever done to change my health as a healthy person. You know, my detox, my cellular detox got my life back. But as a healthy person, you know, it transformed my life. But watch some of those episodes, Doc. I think you'll enjoy it. You know, no doubt.
For sure. I mean, I guess, you know, once again, my concern without reading a lot of that, you know, literature is that you need all of the, you know, you need the B vitamins, you need the vitamin C in order to appropriately detoxify. They're so involved, and yet they're water soluble vitamins. So if you're not taking those into the system, how can you truly detox safely and effectively? I would have to, you know, read a little bit more about it and see.
You know what happens in fast, you know, because I appreciate your comment. Is the innate intelligence knows these things. You know, and first of all, we don't fast people to detox them. We actually fast them to allow the innate intelligence to do what it does best. You know, the growth hormone rises, the cells become very hormone sensitive, you know, to the point where the innate intelligence knows exactly what to do. And, you know, it's remarkable to watch what it does for long periods of time. I talked a little bit about this, I think, in one of the episodes. One of my clients whose nutrition numbers on blood, all her inflammation markers, everything, horrendous. And then she goes into a fast. Her doctor, who was monitoring the fast, he measures all of this and goes, I can't believe it. All of her nutrition numbers got better. All of her inflammation numbers better. I mean, everything went normal. The moment she started eating again, they started tailing down again, which I always say not, you know, one fast doesn't, you know, heal anybody. You know, it's multiple fasts and becoming different lifestyle. But it's interesting in fasting that people's cellular, intracellular nutrition actually improves. That's the power of the innate intelligence. It's actually remarkable, you know. So interesting. I think you'll enjoy it. You're a seeker of truth, you know. And I think if you started wow, I had no idea. But, you know, the body has stores and it has an intelligence to figure it out and the cells work better. You know, it's absolutely remarkable. Well, listen, Doc, we just loved your information today. I mean, to hear from a cardiologist with your experience, make this shift over here, you know, and believe what we believe is absolutely remarkable and outstanding. So I just applaud you. I know that you've gone through even criticism for, you know, standing up against the vaccinations and, you know, and bravo, you stand for truth. And I just so appreciate that because I know that you have been out, you know, pushed out of your other world. You know, it's like, but there's another world that loves you and appreciates you for the truth that you're embracing. So thank you so much, Dr. Jack.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dan. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and I applaud the work you're doing. And Meredith, I definitely want to get some more information about the 10 toxins. I want to share that with my people as well. So make sure I get that info. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, and watch some back episodes. I think that you'll absolutely enjoy them tremendously. So, you know, iron sharpens iron, Doc. So I learned a lot from you today, that's for sure. Thank you.
Good deal. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thanks, both of you. And this is Meredith signing off for Cellular Healing TV. And we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in.
The information shared on today's show can be accessed through our websites, drpompa.com and revelationhealth.com. This Cellular Healing TV episode and past shows are also available for download on iTunes. Help others get real health solutions by liking, reviewing, and sharing our podcasts.